Well, I tell you what, we got to begin breaking ground in earnest this Sunday on our study in Daniel. And, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is the hinge, obviously, that this study is hanging on. But I really felt like it would be beneficial to look at the events surrounding it. So, you know, we picked up there in chapter 2, and we got introduced to King Nebuchadnezzar. And so the king had a restless night. Now, we don't know if it was one night or multiple nights. Now, I don't know, you know, how people sleep, but I think it was Sunday night into Monday. I went into one of those deep sleeps. I don't know if anyone else has them, where it's so vivid and it's so real. And to wake up, you almost feel like you have to kind of climb out of it. It's just a powerful thing, you know.
One of those inception dreams, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad dream. It was just very vivid, very captivating. And so, you know, I woke up, and after wrestling, you know, walking through that, I, you know, thought of Sunday's sermon. So the king has a dream, and double entendre right there. Anyway, and he wants to discern what, if anything, it may mean. You know, sometimes dreams don't mean anything,
right?
But sometimes, you know, they can have purpose and value and different things. And so he called together all of his wisest people, and he wanted them to decipher the dream for him. The problem was none of them could do it. And, you know, not only did he not tell them, not only did he want them to decipher it, but he didn't tell them what the dream was. Now, that's a pretty high bar. I don't know if you've ever been asked to do something that might be impossible, but that is, you know, that, you know, I can't imagine being his, you know, his advisors, and he throws this out at you. So anyway, they have a discussion. They admit they can't do it. And the king got more than a little bit upset and decided that he was going to kill them all. Not just the advisor, but I would assume that it would include the entire family, because that's kind of the way they rolled back then. And, you know, first, you know, my wife mentioned to me Sunday, she goes, you know, that's one of the most foolish things that he could do. And I said, what's that? She goes, well, that you would take out all of your wisest people, you know, over something like that. And I said, well, honey, you know, when you fly off the handle, you know, you can make some really poor choices. And that leads me to where I would like to drill down tonight. Now, you know, I tell you guys that the goal of Wednesday night is to retouch Sunday morning, but it also gives me the opportunity to maybe drill down in an area that I really couldn't do on Sunday. So,
sure.
You know, it's not a reheat, but William Arthur Ward quote was really good. Flying off handles sometimes causes hammers and humans to lose their heads as well as their effectiveness. I think the best response I heard on Sunday was this, when we talked about flying off the handle. That's a nerve that probably, Josh, do you ever fly off the handle?
Unfortunately, I do. You know, I would say that probably the time, now, not very often. I tend to run hot and then cool off real quick. I'm not somebody who, like, you know, but probably the times of my life that I look back and I regret the most of my words or actions are flying off the handle. I mean, I'm kind of a wear my heart on my sleeve kind of guy, as you probably know. I mean, I'm pretty emotional in more ways than one. You know, I tend to care, you know, and be emotional in that sense. I'm not above a good cry or you know, now and then. But Yeah, there are times now. I'm better than I was, and I did see a significant change when I got saved. You know, a significant change. I mean, I was a much younger man, but I saw a significant change in my life. And you can ask my parents, because I used to throw temper tantrums, and then, you know, I got saved. And about that time when I was a teenager, that a lot of that anger just kind of went away. But there's still some moments that I kind of fly off the handle. And is there anything like more embarrassing than flying off the handle and then looking back on it and going, man, I don't know. That's just like, to me, that's like the most embarrassing thing in my life is when I fly off the handle.
Hey, for me, can you kick the volume of your mic up just a scotch?
Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't turn it back. That's turn it back up from after the music. That's my bad.
No, it's okay. It's, you know, it may be just me, but
is that any, no? That I forgot to turn it back up. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Sorry about
that. I wanted to take our time tonight and kind of drill down a little bit in the area of temper and response. When I was younger, I had a shorter fuse. Now I'm like you, I don't hide my emotions well. Unlike you, I think I should cry more. I think it would do me well, but,
let it out.
there's nothing unmanly about it, anything like that, but that's a hard thing for me.
That's because most of the situations, everybody else is crying. You're having to do the funeral or minister to the grieving family. Like, unless you're alone in your car.
And I think, you know, I think that's part of it is you learn how to manage. I guess, you know, but yeah, that's a big part of it is, you know, in group cries, typically, you know, you're trying to lead, you know, and. Yeah. And things so, but anyway,
you should wear a shirt. I'm human too.
That's right. and I don't know. It seems, on the occasions in which I get to crying, actual crying, it's usually kind of over the top.
Yeah, you know? Too much. But, yeah, your cup floweth over.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I am an ugly crier when you get to that. So, but
mascara gets runny the whole nine yards.
Oh, all of it, man. Contacts wash out. I mean, but anger management is something that all of us do. Now, how we project our anger is different. Not everyone flies off the handle outwardly, but we also know that, you know, stuff it down, sooner or later is going to be detrimental, because eventually something's going to explode, and it typically will be over something ridiculous.
The final straw, the straw that breaks the camel's back.
That's right. So I consulted the Mayo Clinic about, you know, anger management techniques, and I've brought to us tonight 10, and we'll try to pop through them. Some of them, there's more room for discussion than others, but I think all of us, like I said, can put these tools in our toolbox, not only for ourselves, but it's also tools that we may be able to utilize when we're engaged with an individual who may be flying off the handle, as it were, because it's not just our actions, but sometimes it can be our response to other people's actions that can be beneficial and defusing, right?
Right, right.
So we'll walk through these real quick, and we'll tussle them around, a few of them. The first one, I think, is easy, is think before you speak. If we were all smart enough to do that, the world would be a better place. You know, what do you think is the challenge of thinking before we speak? What do you think the greatest challenge to being able to do that is?
I think it's because, at least for me, when I get defensive, when I'm attacked, there's like an almost animalistic instinct to attack right back. It's like something with the speed of like, oh, I'm being attacked, I've got to defend. And part of at least my defensiveness as someone who is verbal and talks a lot is to go right back. And so I think it's almost like a, I'm not going to use the word evolutionary. That's not the word I'm looking for. Natural, I guess. Yeah. It's like a defense mechanism.
Right. Absolutely. You know, we tend to respond, and men, you know, that's part of our trigger, you know, when we feel disrespected and those sort of things. But if you can learn to think before you speak, it is one of the greatest tools, not only to enhance your life, but to enhance your relationships. I don't do it all the time. I can say with absolute confidence, I do it more now than I used to. And I'm glad of that because, you know, I've made my life uncomfortable unnecessarily. And so thinking before you speak. Now, I think these other nine steps can give you the space, the breathing room that you can, you know, think through these things. So number two is this: once you're calmed down, then express your anger. So, you know, this is important. If we're going to have a true relationship, we need to have a pathway by which we can express these things.
Right.
And so the challenge that we face is not to launch into it at the moment, but once that wave comes through our lives, because, you know, like we were talking about, there's circumstances, there are times, you know, people will send me emails or text messages or whatever. And sometimes, you know, depending on what the topic is, I'm like anyone else. I've got pride and I've got those things, and I can feel this wave of emotion rolling through me. And I have the wisdom to know, wait until that passes through, because then, you know, you're going to be able to think through it and that sort of thing. And I mean, I've taken days to reply because, you know, I just need to let that filter through, you know.
So is anger, and, you know, anger is, it's just an emotion. Right. I mean, it's just a feeling you can't control. When that comes over you, you can't control feeling angry. I mean, I guess you could work on like triggers or whatever, but you can't control your emotions or your feelings. So anger as an emotion, is it kind of a neutral thing? Is it all about how you express that feeling? Mm-hmm. Or is anger, you know, we hear the term righteous anger all the time. But is there really a different? Is there really a righteous and unrighteous anger, or is it more about the? If you can't control the feeling, is it more about how you express the feeling? I've never really thought about it.
Right. You know, I think a righteous indignation or a righteous anger typically is projected at something.
Okay.
You know, abortion. You know, it's not usually
an individual.
Boiled down to an individual, and gotcha. So. Well, you know, what we're looking at is, you know, kind of a person to person. And so
I hear you.
Once you've calmed down, then you can come back and express, you know, I was really angry because, you know, and that sort of thing. And you can discuss it with a more level head. And it's important to be able to do that because, you know, there can be constructive things that come out of that.
Right.
The third is get some exercise, and who of us can use that? But sometimes just getting away and getting some physical exertion.
Gotcha.
Just kind of cleanses the palate, and it'll actually release endorphins, you know, a chemical response that will reset your brain. And so if you...
Some serotonin.
Yeah, some natural serotonin. Get out in the sun. You'll be surprised how much sitting in a warm car on a sunny day will just, you know, it can really calm things down. So get out, take a walk, you know, go to the gym if that's, you know, something that you do. Mow the lawn. Just go do something physical. And your body...
I've got to interject because I won't say who it is because at least one of the individuals might be watching, but I know somebody told me that an individual, they always knew when their spouse was angry because that was the only time the lawn got mowed.
Well, you know, kudos to getting out there, right? Hey, honey, why are you pounding that board with a hammer? I don't even see a nail.
Is that the old, you know, your mom would say, go hit the pillow kind of thing?
That's,
you know,
right.
Get some, yeah, go get it out of you. Out,
man. Yeah. I mentioned to my bride, and I'm sure there's places like this, but I would love to have a place you could go where you pay and all you do is destroy things.
They have those things. They have that.
That would be spectacular.
I don't know if they have one in the DFW area. I'll have to look it up, but I know what you're talking about.
And so, you know, get some exercise. The body has a natural response and coping mechanism. The fourth is this: take a time out. Sometimes you need to physically take a time out. It's not just for kids. And that could be a different room. It might could be a different place. Maybe you need to go out and get a cup of coffee and sit down for a little while and just get some physical distance between the situation. Take a time out.
They have it, man. They have it in Fort Worth. It's called Smash and Bash.
Mm.
It's in Fort Worth. So you might have to
field trip. That's right.
Field trip.
Field trip. Now let me say about the timeout. I think it's good and it has a place and a value. One of the things that is a challenge that maybe you want to consider is this: communicate why. No, I'm sorry. Communicating that, hey, I'm going to take a time out here.
Instead of just doing it.
Yeah, because, you know, the human mind always fills in the blanks. And if you just walk off, and especially if your timeout is a physical relocation, that's going to be interpreted through the lens, right? And perception's 9/10 of our reality. So, you know, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed here. I need to take a time out. I'm going to step away. And if you're the one hearing that, then you need to respect that. And you need to give them permission to step away.
I think that's great advice. And we need to use that for kids, because so often I've seen with kids is like you have the kid and you talk to him and you're getting on him and all this other stuff. And like, kids get frustrated too. Kids need some space. You know, kids need to know that it's okay. I talk to Grant all the time when Harley's getting on him and he gets so frustrated that he boils over. I'm like, hey, it's okay to get out of that situation and go and cool off. I think but the point you made about communicating, I think, is incredibly important, especially with our spouses, because sometimes I'll get frustrated. It has nothing to do with my wife.
That's right.
Something else that's going on. And if I just hightail it out of the room, she's going to think I'm mad at her.
Yeah. Well, her first instinct would be, what did I do? You know, you want to fight that natural urge to try to bring them back in, you know. Well, don't walk off from me. We need to settle this. Okay. Give them some space. It's okay.
Yeah.
Actually, it'll probably be beneficial in the end. The fifth one is this, is identify possible solutions. A lot of conflict comes from just trying to win the argument.
Right.
You're not about solving the problem. You're about being the winner at the end. And typically there's not a winner when that happens. You know, you may be able to intimidate, anger, frustrate, or whatever someone where they just stop and shut down. That's not a win.
You're right.
And
a lot of times there's repeat, you know, you find yourself in the same kind of cycle. And if you don't identify a solution, if you don't solve whatever the underlying cause is, then that argument or that anger or whatever, that's just going to happen again and again.
Yeah, it's going to come back. And not only if you if you're able to turn your attention on solutions, not only will it answer the question, but there's also side benefits of the sense of accomplishment together, and those sort of things. What's the question and what's possible solutions?
Right.
you just, you know, if you can move on, you know, or create, you know, start working toward an answer, that's a good thing. Number six is this: stick with I statements.
Mm.
You can be very difficult, and they gave an illustration here, so I'll use theirs. Be respectful and specific. For example, say I'm upset that you left the table without offering to help with the dishes. Okay. Instead of saying you never do any housework.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Using I'm upset, you know,
the whole you never, you always comes out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you throw out a statement like that, well, you never do anything around the house. That's a big enchilada you're throwing out there. And
yeah, them's fighting words.
They are. I mean, they sure can be, because, you know, as men, because the odds are we're going to be on the short end of this one. But as men, that immediately calls into question our pride and our provision. And, oh, yeah, well, you know, who mows the lawn when they're angry? You know? Right. Yeah, we're going to start going down that punch list, because that's what we do. You know, we justify. And so, you know, that's really important. In my home, our home, my bride's and I's, forever ago, the agreement was the one who cooks doesn't clean up afterwards.
Nice.
You know, it's a kind, respectful kind of way, and last night my bride cooked, and she, you know, and it's funny, because my bride would go, well, no, I'll clean it up, and I'll remind her, no, you know the rule. and it's, you know, it's a good thing. So I'm just saying, you know, maybe you could be, you know, chip in a little bit. Here. Number seven is really good. Don't hold a grudge.
Mm.
And as Christians, this is a paramount truth. Your faith maturity should lead you to be a person who doesn't hold grudges.
Why do you think that grudges, what leads to the holding of grudges? I mean, because, you know, why does that happen? It seems like it's so prevalent in our culture. Like, it's such a, you know, it's like in the fabric of our society that, like, oh, well, somebody does this to you, then, you know, you got to get them and all that other stuff. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, it's built on the foundation of pride. Mm. Also, it's the ugly stepsister, because of self-preservation.
Mm.
Because if we're not careful, we'll hold a grudge because we're afraid of being hurt again.
Oh, gotcha. It's like a defensive thing.
It is. And that's one of the greatest questions when we talk about forgiveness. God doesn't call us to be a doormat. That's not what the Lord is saying. You can forgive someone without forgetting what has been done.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still hold them in account to it. You know, if you're really mature about it, there might be a bridge back from it. But God doesn't call us to simply, you know, put our nose in front of someone's fist, you know, hypothetically, over and over and over again. So when you hold a grudge, one, it's not beneficial. Two, it's detrimental. Holding a grudge is the poison that kills its own container.
And is the bitterness, that aspect of bitterness, really the key there with holding a grudge? Is that you're kind of letting this, like, bitterness kind of take root,
sure,
take hold?
Yeah, it'll take root. And if you do it enough, broadly enough and deep enough, it'll affect every fiber of your life. It actually can affect your health. And it you know, it's just, it's an important thing to seek to forgive and to let things go. And we wrestle with that, but let me just kind of take it back to the Bible. How many times do we transgress, anger, disappoint the Lord?
Right.
And what is it? Every day. You know, by accident and on purpose. And so Christ is our example. And the Lord doesn't hold into our account. And we need to strive to do that. Even if someone doesn't ask for it, even if someone doesn't receive it, you will benefit from it. You will be better for it. Don't hold a grudge. And you, if you're holding a grudge, you're thinking about it right now. If you're thinking about it right now, you need to let it go. Let it go. You can see them right now. You not only do you see them, but you see the film of whatever it is you're holding a grudge about.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry, let me interrupt. I was just saying that for me, I don't have a history of holding grudges. Thankfully, I struggle with a lot of things. That's not one of them. But the one individual that I can think of in my life where I did, and I don't now, but I think the difficult thing for me was in holding a grudge is seeing someone behave in a way and it actually hurting someone else and continuing to hurt that person, and you can't do anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so that's where the bitterness for me, at least, not that I'm above everybody else or anything, but to me that's harder sometimes is it's not hurting me. It's not about them hurting me, but they're hurting this person I love.
Yeah.
And that can be really,
you're a third party grudger.
That's tough. That's tough. I know you know, if somebody can say anything to you, but if they say something to your bride or to your daughter or your granddaughter or whatever, yeah.
It's a short walk, you know. Don't hold a grudge. And, you know, like I said, if you're thinking of one right now and you need to process through that, we'd love to help you.
Yeah.
It's not always easy, but you can, and you should strive to. Number eight is my favorite. Use humor to release tension. Now, the challenge with humor is a powerful thing. The Bible says humor is a good medicine. Laughter is a good medicine. But you have to make sure it's the right humor.
Right.
If you're unsure, don't throw it out there.
Yeah, you don't want somebody to think you're making light of the situation. Yes, or not take it seriously.
Absolutely. Typically, humor in a moment of tension is third party or third situation humor. It's not at them or about them. It's something on peripheral. The peripheral. Mm. It's kind of that, it's that squirrel. If we all kind of turn our head, but it's a bear trap. So you want to be really mindful, but humor is a powerful thing. If we can just laugh, and sometimes you can even end up laughing at the circumstances that brought this tension into being. Number nine is practice relaxation skills. Take some yoga breaths. sit down, close your eyes, turn on some music, but practice some relaxation techniques, and they're good. Count to 10. Imagine a relaxing scene. Go to your happy place. You hear that, joking all the time. Go to your happy place.
What's your happy place? If you could just close your eyes, would it be? Is it eating lemon chicken in Russia? Is that where you go to?
Oh man, that is a glorious memory right there. Yeah. I do. I did practice yoga. I really should do it again. But the breathing techniques, yoga breathing techniques, are they really do work.
Right.
You know, cleansing breaths, you know, we kind of make fun of. So, and your relaxation technique may be different, but find what works for you and utilize it when need be. And then lastly, number 10 is know when to seek help.
Mm.
That is one of the greatest struggles for some, not all. I think predominantly we men, you may just need to talk to somebody.
Right.
And for you and I, and for those that are with us tonight, let me say this, is if someone seeks out you, you need to be a listener and not an advisor, first and foremost.
Right.
We want to be very careful, very conscientious when people seek us out. Because we, if we're not careful, we can just toss gasoline right on that thing. But sometimes you need a third party. You need a Switzerland. You need someone who's not emotionally invested in the circumstances, because right. they can get a third story view that you may not be able to see. They may see a solution that you either haven't thought of or don't see. It's an amazing thing when you can bring in someone that you trust, you know, all those things. It can be a powerfully productive thing when you realize I'm over my head. I think I might be drowning. I need counsel. I need, you know, and that's a good thing, you know,
Yeah. I mean, there might be somebody, you might have a, there might be such a history that you might need to seek professional counseling or something to work through some stuff maybe in your past. You know, a lot of people grow up with childhood trauma or something, and that's not something you just, like, gut out. You know, that's something that, you know, you need to find. Sometimes it gets to the point, and I agree. I think this is a big challenge because it does take some humility to go, wait a minute, you know, I've tried all these other things. I've tried these nine things, and I'm still – you know, hitting the wall. Maybe I need, you know, there's nothing wrong. And the stigma is getting removed a little bit, but there's nothing wrong with going to the doctor when you're sick. There's nothing wrong with seeing a counselor or a psychiatrist who to help you when you're, you need some help.
Hey, full disclosure. There was a time, in my, you know, in the time that I've even been here at ALF that I reached a place and, I sought professional help, and it helped. And so I want to, you know, reaffirm what you're saying. If do not ever be afraid or ashamed of seeking professional help. It is a gift God has given people, and it is a gift God has given to you. Do not allow yourself to be shamed, embarrassed, or whatever, you know. That's for sure. And so lastly, I think I would be, if I didn't remind ourselves of a wonderful illustration, each and every one of us walk through our lives with two buckets. One's filled with water and the other's filled with gasoline. And when we come up on the sparks of life, because they're going to be there, the bucket we choose to use is going to have a significant and lasting impact. And if you'll think through it, and especially if you choose to use the water, your life will be better. Your health will be better. Your relationships will be better. But if you choose to use the gasoline, you need to be ready for the consequences and understand this. You don't know what all the consequences could be. If you're wanting to burn down the house, baby, you might not get out of the house. Let me just, you know, in a kind of a dark innuendo there. The only person in life you control is you. You can't control all the circumstances, but you can control how you respond to the circumstances. That's where you ask God to give you grace, wisdom, and strength. And understand that it takes a greater man or a woman to walk away in humility than it does to, you know, blow the world up, and for no better reason than just blowing up.
And we live in a world where people are constantly throwing gas.
I'm going to take it one step further. Currently in our culture, a lot of people swim in a pool of gasoline, holding a sparkler in their mouth. our culture is just so out of control right now. And yeah, we're all frustrated. We're all whatever. Okay. But let me just say this, brothers and sisters, friends, the means by which we change is the change happens in us.
Amen.
We evidence and practice the change. I say it, you know, quite often, you know, let's be a part of the answer. Let's be a part of the solution, not part of the problem. That goes for that too. And I try to measure my words very carefully, because I'm carrying two buckets, and you know, a house that's been burnt down is of no value whatsoever.
Have you, in your experience, do you find it the more you use one bucket over the other, the easier it is to keep using that bucket?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If you will just seek and intentionally strive to live in peace and to be a peacemaker, it does come easier to you. It's kind of like, a first responder, military, whatever, you know, you go through training and you train and you train and you train and you train. And the goal is when you train to such a point that when you are in a circumstance of similar, you go on instinct.
Right.
Not feelings.
Right.
You're not processing through the feelings. There's an instinctive response. There's a spiritual truth to that.
Hmm.
I had a coach one time who says this, you've got to practice like you want to play. And so, yeah, absolutely. The more that you do it, the easier it comes. And the more that you want to do it. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's a choice. It's absolutely a choice. And, you know, once we realize that it doesn't mean that we're weak, and it doesn't mean, you know, it sets us free. So if you have these things in your life right now, if you need to talk, come by, have a cup of coffee. Let's talk this thing out. So anywho's, all right, Joshua, closing thoughts, feelings, cries of outrage, fits of anger.
I think this is super helpful. You know, the bucket metaphor analogy is great. You know, I just in my head, and I'm glad that we talked about this, because it was a good reminder to me that all these truths, truth is all comes from God. So when we're giving truth, you know, we don't have to read a Bible verse every second of every day all truth is God's truth, and there is truth here. And I'm so encouraged by it, because sometimes I can get caught up in where there's a difference. We have the Bible and then we have the world. We do have that, but all truth ultimately comes from God. God is truth.
That was
a good reminder for me too. Just like, hey, there's nothing wrong with, you know, people have found some of these anger management techniques. A lot of them are rooted in scripture. We can tell, and it's all truth is God's truth. So if it's true, then you know who to credit.
That's right. We're actually going to talk about that on Sunday when we continue.